We're going to spend a couple more lessons on our series in the Sermon on the Mount, the section that we're calling Inside Out, and then we'll take a break here in a couple of weeks and return to the Old Testament and spend some time with Isaac and Jacob before we come back to the Sermon on the Mount. I want to kind of move back and forth between them so that we're not just here the whole time. But as was read for us, this second to the final section of chapter 5, and it is an interesting scene. Because this is a line that I think is still misused today. That the way the Pharisees were misusing this teaching is still misused today. When somebody says to you, well, an eye for an eye, what do they usually mean by that? Except, well, it's okay that I retaliated because they did something to me, and the scripture says, an eye for an eye. I mean, you'll hear politicians do that. Well, you know, eye for an eye. They did something to me, I'll do something for them. To them. We have it in our own society, in our own culture, that this is somehow a justification that the scriptures were saying, if you do something to me, I can do something to you. And it becomes evident as we've been going through Matthew chapter 5 that Jesus has been correcting the misunderstanding that the teachers of the law and the Pharisees had regarding what the law of Moses said. And one can see how easily that would be the case here. An eye for an eye. So, listen, whatever you do to me, I have the right to do to you. But it's important for us to begin by asserting here, as we'll show in a moment, that's not at all what was ever being taught when the scripture says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That is a gross misreading of what was being said. And one of the ways that we can know that is because the law of Moses itself said directly not to ever do that. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. And some will come along and go, well, loving your neighbor as yourself is a New Testament idea. No, it's not. And the idea of turning the other cheek that we're going to read about here is a New Testament concept. No, it's not. It has always been, you do not take vengeance. You do not retaliate. You do not respond in kind. And Leviticus 19 made it clear. The times in the Old Testament where we read about the statement of an eye for an eye, and those texts are up there on the screen for you, they were always given in terms of Israel's civil law. It was telling the judges how they were to decide cases. And let me show you one of those places. Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 18. The judges shall inquire diligently, and if the witness is a false witness and has accused his brother falsely, then you shall go do to him as he had meant to do to his brother. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and the rest shall hear and fear, and shall never again commit such evil among you. Your eye shall not pity. It shall be life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Notice the direction was given to the judges. This was how they were to deal with court cases. This was not a universal law to the individual. You do something to me, I do something to you. Rather, it was for the judgments of such cases that what you would have the judge understand is, if it is found true that a certain activity happened, a certain violation occurred, a certain offense happened, then the judgment, the punishment that should be passed should be equal to the crime. And notice how he terms this here, because I think both are very important in dealing with the extremes that often happen in terms of government and civil trials and things like that. Notice he says, your eye shall not pity. The punishment should not be less than the crime. Your eye should not pity, judges. You should not be lenient. You should do exactly as was done, but by the same token, the punishment must not be more than the crime. an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a life for a life, a hand for a hand. It's not a hand for a life. It's not a tooth for an eye. It is whatever was done, then the punishment must fit the crime. Do not be too lenient and do not be too harsh. And this was the ruling that was given. None of this was ever intended for the Pharisees to go around and say, well, because you punched me in the face, I'm going to wail and punch you too. Or because you hurt me, I get to harm you, an eye for an eye. And that's how they were using it. And unfortunately today, that's how people use it also. And that's not what Jesus was teaching. It's not what the law of Moses was teaching, and nor was it what God ever intended. Rather, eye for an eye was to be the principle by which, when punishments were given down by their courts and by their judges, that the punishment would always befit the crime. Not too severe, and yet not too lenient. So what Jesus now must do is try to explain to them, here's what God intended. Let us understand what God's law is in terms of what do we do when someone does harm us. When somebody does something to us, what should we do? Since eye for an eye is being misused, and that's what we like to do, you do something to me, I will do something to you, which is a very natural human response, not a spiritual, heavenly, godly response, but a physical, selfish response. What does Jesus say to do? What we'll notice in this paragraph is that Jesus is going to assert the principle, and then he gives four illustrations on what that looks like. One principle, four illustrations. Here's the principle that he gives, and you'll find it there in your scriptures there in verse 39. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. That's the principle. Now, you might read that and go, wait a minute. And that's what I think a lot of people have done. We go, don't resist the one who is evil. I thought we're supposed to resist evil, right? And that's not what is being intended here. It doesn't mean that we do not oppose evil or resist the devil, as the scriptures plainly tell us, that we take a stand against evil, we teach against evil, we don't follow evil, we don't follow after the devil. And as like Paul taught in 1 Corinthians, it doesn't mean that we tolerate evil either. We resist evil in the church as well. And that's what's told to us 1 Corinthians 5. It is important to keep in the context that this is a principle regarding personal vengeance. We are talking about the situation where somebody does something evil to you. Somebody comes to you and harms you as an individual. What are you supposed to do? And the principle that he gives is don't resist. And now I think wisely, as we'd sit back and go, now wait a minute, Jesus goes, let me give you four illustrations so that you can understand what I mean by that. Somebody's coming to harm you, they hurt you, they have done something to you. They've hurt you. What are you supposed to do about it? Notice the four illustrations that he gives, verse 39. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. This one is probably one of the most well-known, and probably also is equally misunderstood. It was about what is being taught here about the idea of turning the other cheek. But the idea behind it is you are dealing with a personal offense or an insult. That's what you gather from if the right hand is striking the right cheek. That's not a natural way of striking somebody. If I'm coming after you and I strike you with my right hand, I'm coming in, that's going to be on your left side. And so there's the idea here of what was often called that backhanded insult. And we still use the terminology today. That was a slap in the face. That's exactly what is being described here. If somebody has harmed you, they have insulted you, they have offended you. We're not talking offended like, oh, you said something really nice, really mean that hurt my feelings and that wasn't very nice. We're talking about an actual offense that happens, an insult, some kind of personal thing that somebody has done to you. And notice the response that Jesus says that the Christian is supposed to have is that you don't respond in kind. That's the whole idea of turn the other cheek. The easiest thing to do when somebody is insulting to us, is personally offensive to us, is attacking us and harming us, is to do the same thing right back to them. And he says, don't do that. Don't respond that way. That's not what followers of God do. They're not going to return fire for fire. They are not going to respond in the same way. Because so often that's what we do. We say, well, I'm justified because they did this. They hurt me, and so I get to hurt them back. You know, they started it, they said this, those kinds of mean words, they insulted them, so now we respond in the same way. And what Jesus is saying is, no, just because somebody has insulted you, has hurt you, has caused you harm and pain and those kinds of things, that doesn't mean that we get to do the same thing back to them. And so that is the first illustration that he brings to them, is that if someone hurts us, we're not justified in hurting them back. We're not justified in saying mean things too. We're not justified that I now get the right to insult them because they've got it going first. That's the idea of turning the other cheek. We're going to allow them to insult and insult and say what they want to say and behave how they want to behave, but I'm not going to respond in kind. I'm not going to return fire for fire. He pushes this idea even further in the next illustration, verse 40. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. Here is another misunderstanding of a scene, an illustration that he gives. Two things that we have to understand about this illustration to be able to understand properly what Jesus is talking about. Notice that it says you're being sued. That's important not to miss. That somebody is suing you for your tunic. And so what's undergirding the illustration is you apparently owe something. They've gone to court against you because of something you own. They're coming to you and they're saying, you owe me this. And I think then the second thing you have to capture is the cloak was a right of the individual that you were to possess that. Do you remember that in the scriptures in Exodus 22 and verse 25? Here Exodus says, if you lend money to any of my people with you who is poor, you shall not be like the money lender to him. You shall not exact interest from him. If ever you take your neighbor's cloak in pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down, for that is his only covering. If his cloak is his body, in what else shall he sleep? And if he cries to me, I will hear, for I am compassionate. Notice that even if the cloak was taken in a pledge, you who have the right to the cloak was supposed to give it back to that individual so he could use that as his blanket, as to keep him warm at night. And so in the idea of giving the cloak, when you put those two ideas together, you are seeing the picture of the willingness to forfeit one's rights. And so here is the person that he's saying, you know what the Christian does? You know what the disciple does? You pay what is owed and you go even above and beyond with that. That you are willing to deal with your debts and pay what you owe, and you're willing to go way past that. In fact, one of the great examples of that, you might remember this tax collector named Zacchaeus. And a bunch of people are really upset about Zacchaeus being told that salvation has come to his house. And in this uproar, you have Zacchaeus say, if I've wronged anybody, I'll pay it back to him fourfold. I will go above and beyond what is owed to show my loyalty to this one whom I serve, Jesus. And that's the idea that is being pictured here by Jesus, the willingness to give above and beyond what is owed to those whom we owe, and that would go even to the giving up of our rights. Now, that's a really strong statement. You say, now, even of the giving of my rights, and I think Jesus is even aware of that, because notice the next illustration pushes the giving of the rights even further in verse 41. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Now this is interesting because in the days of the Roman Empire, they had the ability, the Romans had the ability, to commandeer civilians to carry their luggage of military personnel for a prescribed distance, which is 1 Roman mile. And so a soldier could come along and say, you got to carry my stuff for 1 mile. And that was what the Roman law was. That's how you helped out the Roman military at that time, which, of course, all the people who had been subjugated by the Roman armies hated. They are not happy that they're under Roman power and under Roman military might. And so the armies come along and say, you got to carry our stuff. And you had to carry them 1 mile. That was the law. And Jesus comes along and says, so don't just carry it 1 mile, carry it 2. And so you are legally obligated to carry it 1. And Jesus is saying, don't worry about just that simple 1. You go even further than that. And so the idea continues is that God's people don't just do the bare minimum. They go beyond what is prescribed. They're willing to go further. And that's what both of those illustrations are doing. You are willing to do extra. You are willing to do more. You will go further than what your rights even say you have to do, or even what is necessarily owed from you, or what may be physically required of you. You will be willing to go past that and go even further than that. And so you see Jesus describing a scene where his people are not so concerned about their rights, but are willing to do for other people rather than being concerned about themselves. And he uses some scenes from which you would have in that first century. He goes, you know, you can imagine what somebody would want to do in that society and in that system. I mean, the Roman is making you carry their heavy bags a whole mile. And you're probably counting that thing down. You know, like, okay, and 1 mile is right here. You know, gone. You're just out of there. I'm not doing another step. And Jesus goes, no, you just keep right on walking. You just keep right on walking. You just keep carrying those bags. Even though you don't have to, that's what you will do. You know, so often we approach service to God in terms of, well, what do I have to do? And I hope you see that Jesus is blowing that up. It is not about what do I have to do. It is a question of what can I do? How much more can I give of myself? How much further can I go? What else can I do to help you? How much more can I be of assistance to you? This is the picture that is being given. He uses a fourth illustration to go even further with that. Verse 42. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. So now he pictures you be willing to give your property to those who would have a genuine need, which would require us to recognize that these things are a gift of God that we have. And it's not my things, and I'm not going to give you anything because this is my stuff. You see somebody who has legitimate need, you give to them. Somebody needs to borrow from you, you help them. Do you have to? No, you don't have to. That's what you're supposed to do, is what Jesus is doing. You're going again above and beyond. You're not doing just what is owed. You're not doing just what is of your rights. You are going beyond those lines and are willing to do even more. So I hope you then get a sense of what Jesus is doing here, because I think it is a tremendous challenge. The message that he is laying out here is, number one, somebody evil who has come against you and is harming you. One, you don't retaliate. You don't respond in kind. You don't do to them what they've done to you. You don't hurt them in the same ways that they've hurt you. I just always remember as a kid, what was the best justification you had for why you were always in a fight? Well, he started it. Right? Well, they started it. And a follower of God ends it not by retaliating, by not responding in kind, by not escalating the situation, by not continuing the mayhem and the insults and the evil doing and the harming. Instead, we will not act that way, but we will show that we are willing to give of ourselves and sacrifice of ourselves. This is the inside out that Jesus is getting at, and why the lesson is simply called sacrificing. Because this is what he is driving at, is that the picture of the follower of Jesus is that there is the willingness to sacrifice self, even in the face of insults, even in the face of harm, even in the face of mistreatment. Second, he's telling us you don't make much of your rights. We don't make much of our rights. That the Christian is willing to give up our rights for the other person. I might have the right to say, well, I don't have to do that. Right. Well, you didn't have to carry the bag the second mile. You could have just dropped the bags right there on mile one and said, I don't have to take another step. And you could say, well, I'm only going to pay what I've owed. Here's the person who's being sued and says, you only get my tunic. And he says, you give them the cloak too, even though that's your right to keep. You give them that too. There is the picture here of the willingness to give up our rights. Consider that the idea is that personal sacrifice is going to replace personal retaliation. That personal sacrifice is going to replace personal rights. It is not, well, here are my rights and I get to do these things, but, well, what else can I do? Friends, that's what Jesus did. I mean, that's really what Jesus did. The willingness of what Philippians 2 describes about of the forfeiting of his rights to be taking on the position of a lowly, humble servant for our good. We shouldn't be surprised that this is the picture of what God calls for His people to be, because Jesus exemplified that in the very fact of leaving heaven and coming here and dying for us. All of that was for our benefit, not for His good, that's for our good. He could have said, well, that's their problem, I don't have to do anything about that. And yet, Jesus, in His love, was willing to go above and beyond. And that's the picture that is given to us, that we are willing to do more than what is required of us. Now, here's what makes this really hard. This is hard enough when we are talking about people that we like. This is hard enough when we are talking about our friends. This is a challenge as it is when we are talking about people in this room that we're going to do this, and we struggle with, okay, I've got to go the extra mile. I've got to be willing to do those kinds of things. But remember what our context is. The principle is, do not resist the one who is evil. Now it got hard. You're talking about somebody who doesn't have your best interests in mind or heart at all. You're talking about somebody who has it out for you. And there is still the willingness to live a different life, to be willing to sacrifice, to be willing to do what's in their best interest, to be willing to go the extra mile, to be willing to give more than is needed, to not respond in kind to the evildoer, to not insult and return fire as they return it on you. That's when it becomes hard. Hard enough when we need to do this when it comes to our friendships, it comes to marriage, when it comes to family. These principles all apply. But now take it Monday to Friday and you do it at work, and you do it with your neighbors, and you do it with strangers, and you do it with people who don't care about you at all. These are the principles that were given to us. And if there was any uncertainty of that, consider the Apostle Paul came along and said the exact same thing in the book of Romans. He just simply parrots exactly what Jesus teaches here in the Sermon on the Mount. And we will end with this passage. Romans 12, verse 14. Bless those who persecute you. Bless, and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends upon you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For by so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. It's not an eye for an eye, personal vengeance. It is doing good in the face of evil, not retaliating, going the extra mile, and giving more than is required to those who are evil, to those who would harm us, to those who would persecute us, is a picture of our willingness to give. Justified retaliation is not the picture of a Christian. The picture of the Christian is selfless sacrifice. Give your cheek, give your tunic, give your body, give your possessions. Those were the four illustrations of life in the kingdom of God. Pull your psalm books out. Let's sing in.